Welcome to the podcast, Speaking to Influence, Communication Secrets of the C-Suite. I'm Dr. Laura Sokola, your host, and our focus is on mastering communication as an essential leadership skill so that you can command the room, connect with the audience, and close the deal in any context. After over 200 episodes, we are a top 1% podcast globally, thanks to you. So if you love listening to these conversations as much as I love sharing them with you, please take 30 seconds to leave us a five-star rating and review, or just go to the website ratethispodcast.com/influence and follow their super simple directions. On with the show. My guest this week is Dr. Sarah Combs. Sarah is the CEO of University Area Community Development Corporation. She won the Tampa Bay Business and Wealth's Women Who Win Award. After 14 years in community development, she has secured over $100 million in investments to enhance the university area community around the University of South Florida. Dr. Sarah, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
What's a fun fact about you?
Fun fact about me is I'm a farmer's daughter.
Okay.
From Colorado. And what makes it special about that is I lived in a tiny little town called Dove Creek.
Okay.
And we were the pinto bean capital of the world. So
goodness.
Yes, pretty impressive.
Pinto bean capital. So you are a pinto bean farmer, not just a home gardener.
That's right. Pinto bean farmer. Beans and wheat.
Beans and wheat. So do you have like more recipes? Is it like a Bubba Gump shrimp list of pinto bean recipes you've got?
Oh, I grew up learning how to eat beans for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And so while I do love some Anasazi beans and pinto beans, I just, you know, think I ate too much of them as a kid.
Got it. Yes, there is a saturation point that we all hit with certain foods. That's great. Well, you can share with me afterwards some of your favorite recipes from back in the day when you were still happy eating them.
That's right.
All right. So tell us about your organization. What's the 30-second elevator pitch?
University Area Community Development Corporation is a public-private nonprofit. And we're dedicated to improving the area outside of the University of South Florida, and that's in Tampa, Florida. We do that through youth and adult programs, education, health and wellness, affordable housing, and overall community planning.
Beautiful. In doing all of that, what is the most important leadership communication lesson that you had to learn, and how did you learn it?
Oh, I would have to go with active listening. And I have a story about that one, actually. I remember when I was just starting off as a CEO, and I thought I was the guru, the master of multitasking, and thought that I could do, you know, four things at once. And I remember specifically, I was in a meeting with one of my direct reports, and on my mind was just budgeting. I had a budget deadline. And my direct report was talking to me about some of the challenges, you know, she was having, and shared with me some examples of some personal challenges. And in my mind, I was budgeting. I was trying to figure out those numbers. And I caught myself because I heard her crying. And I turned and gazed my look at her and saw how upset she was and just felt so shameful about that. And so, you know, we got through the conversation, but, you know, our relationship never got back to where it was because of that moment.
And she was crying because of the struggle she was going through, or because she realized that you weren't present in the moment, or both?
She was sharing, you know, her heart with me. She was crying because she, you know, was emotional about her health challenges that she was going through. Mm. And, you know, when I really caught on and looked at her, I knew that she knew I wasn't fully present.
Yeah.
And so that lesson, these lessons that we learn in life, I think that sometimes they're a beautiful opportunity for us not to repeat. And so I often think about, you know, how important active listening is. And so I always close my computer. I turn off my phone, not turn it off, but maybe put it on vibrate. And really give an opportunity for, you know, whoever I'm talking with to know that I'm fully present and I'm engaged in that conversation. And I just think that active listening is so incredibly important and something I had to learn early on, and something that I still, every time I have a meeting, I remember, you know, that feeling and that look that she gave me. And it taught me a valuable lesson.
It is amazing, isn't it, how she didn't have to say anything. It was the look on her face that was kind of a knife in the gut feeling in that moment.
Gut-wrenching. I mean, I still can feel it, you know, and I was just so disappointed in myself because I know better. I knew better. And that actually pivoted me to stop saying how good I was at multitasking, because, you know, that led me to realize how it's important to focus on one thing sometimes, especially when you're having a conversation.
Yeah. And I think that word multitasking itself, it should be an indicator. A person's not a task.
That's right.
They're not to be multiplied and just batched out.
That's right. Well, and you know, the other piece of it, I think that, you know, for me was being able to really listen. That gives you an opportunity to, you know, ask questions and have prompts and make sure that you're getting feedback, you know, all of those pieces that are so important. And if you're not actively there, you miss all of those opportunities. And those opportunities often lead you to, you know, look into your business for areas that you need to improve. So active listening just isn't important for the person, you know, sitting across from you. It's important for yourself, because that's how you learn about what's happening in your organization or get a clue as to, you know, something to look at or modify or amend. So it's taught me a great lesson. I'm not proud of, you know, how I got there, but it's important to know how to move forward with that.
Yes, I think we are all guilty of I know how to active listen. I know what it's about. I know how to do it. But we need to shift from I know to I do, I do.
I like that.
And I think that's a big gap that most of us fail miserably to leap across effectively. At least I personally do. So I should just speak for myself here.
No, I completely agree. I think it's important. And, you know, when I speak with some of my staff that are newer in the workforce, you know, I was talking about how important that is, because I want to pass those lessons on. I don't want individuals to have to learn from the mistakes that I've had. So those are always those key nuggets that you have of how you can pour something that you've learned into someone else to make them a better leader.
Isn't it funny? The lessons that we learn the hard way are always the ones that we're most enthusiastic to share. And the ones that everybody else is so loath to learn from our mistakes. It's like, we just insist on learning the lessons, the hard lessons, the hard way for ourselves. Why are we so hard-headed about taking somebody else's advice about what not to do?
I think it's that lived experience, right? Like if someone just gives you that advice, but you don't have anything attached to it, you don't learn it as well. But if you learn it by walking through that fire, it's almost ingrained in you. And that's sometimes the only way that you really can learn is by doing and going through it and experiencing it. I know for me, that's the kind of learner I am, is I really have to experience it. And once I do, good or bad, right, it doesn't leave me.
Yes. I think there's no emotional attachment to somebody else's pain.
Oh, that's,
it's almost like until you have the experience for yourself and you've got the scars, emotional, physical, or otherwise, to prove it, then you go, oh, right. So that's what Dr. Sarah was talking
about.
Yeah. Oh, I get it now. I understood it intellectually before, but I didn't get it. I think there's a big difference, right? If we understand it in our brains, we get it in our gut.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when it hurts. And that's when we shift the needle. Now, tell me about a time when you made the wrong call and had to fix it. Who'd you approach first and what did you say to them?
We are community planners. And so for us, you know, ensuring that we're in the community, working with the community, engaging the community is really important. And so we had gotten 7 acres of land in the heart of the community. It was in one of the highest crime statistic track, and that's important to know. And my predecessor had determined that we were going to build housing on that property. And so when he left and I stepped into his role, that's what it was slated for. So of course, me, you know, taking on those plans and assuming, right, that's the key word, assuming that he did the due diligence of community outreach and engagement.
Assuming.
I started to put those plans into work and, you know, started to focus on building housing in that community. I walked the block because I was doing some sampling and kind of looking at the plans that I had gotten. And I ran into a group of residents that were sitting on the corner and just started, you know, having a conversation with them about this beautiful property and these beautiful houses that we're going to build for the community. And, you know, I'll never forget it. And one of the ladies that was sitting there turned around and looked at me and said, "Have you asked the community what they want?" And I thought, surely he did, right? Surely he asked the community and held community conversations and did community engagement the way it should be done. But I didn't know that for sure.
Right.
I didn't know that for a fact. And they went on to tell me, and I used that opportunity to kind of pivot and say, well, I would love to hear what your thoughts are, and use that opportunity as a small focus group. And what I learned was the community didn't want any more housing. They wanted a park. They wanted a place where their kids could play, a place where they could meet their neighbors and build that community efficacy that was so missing in this community. And so, you know, I quickly learned how important it is to make sure that you're engaging the right people in the right conversations at the right time, and how important it is not to just assume that someone had asked before. And for me, that lesson continues to follow me and I learn from it. But again, if someone would have just told me that, I might not have learned it as well as going through that experience and, you know, having to really assume. And I think assumptions in community planning are just so dangerous. And, you know, something that we have to be really mindful of, ensuring that we get the right feedback at the right time.
And I would imagine that's twice as hard when you are inheriting a project that's already underway. Of course, you're going to give the prior leader benefit of the doubt that they did certain things. I mean, you're not starting from scratch. Maybe we do need to go back from scratch and double check, cross every T and dot every I. But so many people would argue, well, that's a waste of time. This person already did all of this stuff. We can go and look through every document, look through everything. Where's the line between how much is just duplicative work versus how much is insurance, right? That ounce of prevention for the pound of cure. So I can see where that's a hard decision to make. It sounds like he fell prey to what I would call the entrepreneur's curse, which is, I have such a great idea for what I think would be awesome here and everyone should love it. And then we go into the field of dreams approach to entrepreneurship, right? That whole, if you build it, they will come and everybody will just love this thing and everybody will want it after I've built it, as opposed to, gee, maybe I should go and see if people would want this if I were to build it. And we fall so in love with our product, our ideas, our services, instead of falling in love with our customers, our clients, the people that we serve.
Yeah.
It's easy to get, at least for me, I know it's certainly very easy to get blinded by my own enthusiasm for my own ideas. And so you had to overcome that. That must have been a difficult challenge for you, because it sounds like there were already a lot of conversations that had been had, zoning regulations and planning boards and all that kind of stuff. If the housing project was already underway, there was a lot to unwind at that point.
There was, absolutely. And I think that I had two choices. I had a choice of just kind of ignoring what they said and continuing on, because a lot of time and money had been spent, obviously, getting that project to where it was. But the other piece of it was how important it was for me to know that the plans that were underway were done in the right way. And so that led me an opportunity to be able to go back and see and look. And what I found was there was not the engagement at a community level that was needed. Mm. And so that way out turned to be a little bit difficult, because I had to spend more money.
Yeah.
I had to take more time. And at the end of the day, we didn't get an infusion of cash like the housing would have allowed us to.
Right.
It was a park, right? So it's the opposite of income.
Yeah.
It's going to take a lot of money to run this private park in the heart of the community. But what I heard through those conversations was how important this park was to the community and how it could be a catalyst for change.
Right.
And, you know, it was one of the best decisions I ever made. Did it get scrutinized? Oh boy, did it. Did my board get very heavily involved and really try to persuade me against that idea? Absolutely.
I bet they did.
But to this day, it's one of my proudest developments and something that I take pride in, knowing that it's the heartbeat of the community and it's how we're changing the community one block at a time.
I would love to have been a fly on the wall for that first board meeting that you had to convene and say, there's something I'd like to discuss with you about that housing plan. How did you start that conversation?
Yeah, I think I started with information, right? So I think the information is important. Here's the information that I was given, which wasn't much. Here's the plans. And then here's what I've learned so far, you know? And I think that thankfully on our board at that time, we had individuals that were from the community in terms of had businesses in the community. So we had some pastors on there. We had some individuals who had businesses there. And so they really understood the makeup of the community, the needs of the community, and they saw what a great asset that this park could bring, not just to the residents, but for the overall community building master plan that we were looking for. So thankfully, I had them on my side and they could speak to, you know, that lived experience of how important this park would be. And it took some additional committee time and committee work, you know, to work through it. And very often we find ourselves wanting to take the easy way out. This was not the easy way out. This was the hard route. And for us, it was important that we just moved forward in a way that we could feel good about. You know, at the end of the day, we could feel good about the decision. And I commend my board for allowing me to move forward and build the park.
Yes. And I think it was an expensive change at that point, as you mentioned, for a variety of reasons. But the other problem we tend to fall into is the feeling, well, I've already spent this much money on it, so I don't want that to have been a waste. So I'm just going to see it through to the end. So then we end up throwing good money after bad and completing building something that nobody wants, or that ends up being more of a money pit for other reasons, other problems than, okay, they needed a park for safety, changed community, said it was a high crime area, a park that's well policed, that's or at least managed somehow, adds safety, adds community, changes dynamics. So there could have been higher crime rates, there could have been higher other issues. So who knows what other expenses could have come out of it that would have yeah, the good money after bad lesson is yet another one that we learn the hard way.
I see leaders do that all the time. I mean, it's a great example that you use because it happens so often. You're in too deep, yes. Right? You're in too deep. You can't go back now. And I think oftentimes that's also a pride. You got to humble yourself.
Yes.
So you got to humble yourself. And, you know, oftentimes that doesn't happen in the corporate world. The business world is, you know, this was my idea. This was my plans. I've already spent this money. I'm moving forward. No, you know, just there is no negotiation options. And so, you know, I felt some of those pieces for sure, especially the piece where I had to, you know, go before the board and realize that, you know, the due diligence wasn't there on my end. And it wasn't. So that was a humbling experience for me, but also an opportunity for me to learn and grow as a leader.
I would imagine that there's a difficulty or at least a challenge in the sensitive nature of that conversation, because it, to an extent, you have to sort of say, I know that, I'll call him Bob, had put these plans together and this beautiful idea for this housing. However, it does not appear that Bob did his due diligence. Here's what I've learned. Like, you're identifying failure on the part of the prior leader and visionary. How do you address that in a way that isn't just throwing Bob under the bus in a undiplomatic way?
I mean, I think you apply the 80-20 rule kind of, you know, it's like you focus on it a little bit, but then you move into solution mode. And that for me was the approach that I took was, here's the facts, here's what I've uncovered, but let's not get caught up in that. Let's get caught up in the solution, how we're moving forward and how I'm going to secure the funds in order for us to pivot. How I'm going to get this park built, you know, what funding we're going to seek out and how we're going to involve the community along the way so that way it becomes the community's park.
Yes.
It's not our park, it becomes their park. And so, you know, and then really tying that linkage to how this is going to help us with overall community planning, how this park will continue to help with changing the health disparities in the community, how it will decrease crime, how it will create territoriality and placemaking and, you know, all of these pieces that will really contribute to the overall community that we all want to see. And I think that once you're able to paint that picture, because of course, you know, we have the paintbrush, we're painting the picture. It depends on what we're going to paint. And so I think painting a picture of forward progress and how we're going to go about doing this was what the board needed to see. I wasn't going to focus on the problem. It was going to focus on the solution. And that was enough of what they needed to feel secure enough to say, okay, she does have a fully baked plan that covers kind of all these touch points that a board would say no to. And I think that that was the reason that they allowed me to move on to step two. There was many steps that I had to cross, but each one allowed me to move forward. And that was the overall goal, move forward, progress.
Yes. And I like that 80-20 rule. We're not going to sugarcoat. We're not going to hide the fact that, yes, unfortunately, this person did miss some important details, like getting the buy-in from the community in the first place. We've acknowledged it. It's there.
Moving on.
There's nothing to be done about it. Yeah, now let's move on. So it just is what it is. But in that balance between the what you say and the how you say it, there's no drama. There's no doing your best to continue to heap the blame on him so as to try to make yourself look better or do whatever it is. There's no scapegoating involved. It's just plain and simple. Here's the deal. It is what it is. Now, encouraging everybody, let's focus on the solutions and where do we go from here? So just as that note to self that it is in the way that the facts are delivered, it doesn't do any good to much as there may have been part of you that wanted.
Oh,
to
of course.
Be like, can you believe that Bob did this? And now he totally screwed me over. And now I got to figure out how to, and the whole community and you guys, and how much money, and it's not my fault. I swear it's not my fault. Was there a little bit of that in the back of your head?
Oh, I mean, I think every leader, you know, it's like those emails that you write, you know, I usually have to write two and then my third one I can actually send, but you kind of just need to let it all out. And I certainly had that moment, but at the end of the day, how are we going to progress the community? How are we going to move the plans forward? That's what I wanted to focus on. And I also had the pleasure of knowing my board pretty well. So knowing, you know, how they operate and changing my communication style to adapt to what they're used to and what motivates them to move forward. And I knew that that was the best approach.
Yes. Now, I think that this would be an excellent time to go to our listener 24-hour influence challenge, because it sounds like you just overcame a huge challenge there. So this is your chance, Dr. Sarah, to speak directly to our audience and challenge them to take one step that they can complete within 24 hours to have more influence. How would you like to challenge our listeners today?
All right. I would like to challenge the listeners by complimenting someone, not just one person, but three people.
Okay.
It's something that, you know, you can easily do in your day, but you have to be very intentional about it. has to be in person.
Zoom is okay. Does Zoom count as in person?
Zoom does not count. Zoom
does not count in person.
No, okay. It's not.
It has so for those who are remote full time, they have to find somebody that they are.
You go to a coffee shop, maybe you walk your dog, pick up dinner. I mean, there's opportunities for you to do this. And after you do it and after you're sincere about doing it, I want you to have some reflection time at the end of the day after you've done this to think about not just how it made them feel, but how did it make you feel? I think oftentimes we don't realize the power of a compliment for someone and what it can do.
Yeah.
And, you know, we take that for granted that we have the power to really truly change someone's day just by giving them a compliment, making eye contact, smiling. Sometimes that's all someone needs to be able to get through that day. And if you have the chance to do that to three people, that's how we change the world. One smile, one conversation, one compliment at a time.
So for those out there who are not of the compliment natural type, I don't know if there's a personality Myers-Briggs DISC sort of profile that's of that.
I'm sure there is.
For those who are like, I don't know how to do that without feeling like I'm flirting or getting into some big, deep conversation. What's an example or two of the simplest kinds of compliments that you could pay to somebody that just one and done?
Compliment someone on their outfit. That one's a simple one if you like someone's shirt.
So the words would be, nice shirt.
I really like your shirt.
Yep.
I saw someone this morning and they were dressed in all yellow. And I said, oh my gosh, you're bringing the sunshine today. I love your outfit.
Yep.
I mean, you know, it can be something as simple as that. I like your shirt. You know, if you're a person with few words, I like your shirt, would do.
Yep.
Will do. But, you know, if you find another opportunity to go beyond that and share why you like their shirt, then that creates an opportunity for conversation and for an opportunity for them to say something back to you as well. But, you know, you'll be surprised at how, of course, it'll make someone else feel, but how it'll make you feel at the end of the day. And it's not something that I think is unattainable. Three compliments in person, something doable.
It really is. And the nice thing is, as you've referenced, you can give a compliment in 2 to 4 words. Nice shirt. I like your shirt. I think an easy cue for a lot of people is that if somebody is wearing a shirt with a concert that they attended or a team that's something local, or a lot of women now have the manicures that are all sorts of glitzed over and cost more than my car probably. But, you know, if somebody's got those things, they're wearing them because there's meaning in them. They put effort. They love that band. They love that team. They chose that color and the nail polish, whatever it is. So they already, that has meaning to them. So just to acknowledge cool manicure or go team or whatever it is, 2 words, you're showing that solidarity that you recognize what they already have actively chosen and what holds meaning for them. So to pick up on those little nonverbal cues gives you an opening for what to look for.
And I also think that it shows you that you see them.
Yes.
And I think there's a lot of people out there that need to know that you see them. And it's honestly as simple as that.
Yes. Love it. 2 words, 4 words, simple compliment, 3 times. Have fun. And watch the smiles that you get. I love the smiles that people give you back when you find that trigger and that little nerve. It's awesome. Now, Dr. Sarah, was there ever time that you had to speak up as the lone voice of dissent or disagreement? What happened and how did it go?
Yeah, I often find myself in that seat. And I think it's oftentimes when I'm on a board or a council or an ad hoc committee or something where we're talking about the overall community. And where I think I find myself having to speak up is usually around planning efforts. So I'll give you an example.
Great.
We were in a committee meeting and we were talking about kind of an overall master plan for an area and assets for a community. And they were talking about building a specific building in a certain area. And they went on to, you know, to talk about how great this building would be and, you know, all the amenities and all of these things. And there's adequate parking and, you know, everything was great. The challenge was that it was off the beaten path, so to speak. It was a little bit outside of the city area. And so my question was, is what about transportation? And they went on to talk about how important it was to have 3 parking spaces for each person and, you know, over the requirements. And I said, well, what about bus transportation?
Yeah, public.
And it never even dawned on them. It never dawned on them that individuals who don't have a car, which in our community, the main mode of transportation is walking, biking, and busing.
Sure.
It never dawned on them that majority of the people that would be living there need public transportation, not just to get to work, but to get to, you know, their kids' school, to get to the doctor's
office,
to get to the grocery store. I mean, all of those pieces. And so that's just a really concrete example of how important it is to be able to make sure that even if you are in a meeting and you're the only one maybe in your field, but you know that they're missing something, you have to speak up. It's not usually done with intention or purpose. It's done because they don't know. They don't have the lived experiences, the knowledge, the history that you do. And so your voice is so incredibly important. And so, you know, working in a low-income community, a community of color, I often find myself being the one that's always raising my hand to talk about, you know, what about this community? And, you know, how about this? And sometimes that's a little bit difficult because people give you the eye rolls or, you know, they're like, oh, we know what she's going to say.
Yeah.
But it's so incredibly important for me to speak up and speak out because oftentimes the individuals who need these services or need these amenities aren't in that room, right? These meetings that are held usually aren't at a time that's convenient for residents, nor are they able to get there. There's a number of different reasons.
No transportation.
Transportation, childcare, you know, all these pieces. So you have to speak up. You have to speak out. You have to be that advocate. And, you know, that's the role I signed on for.
It's frustrating in some ways. I find that whenever I'm kind of pigeonholed into that, oh, here comes Laura talking about whatever topic yet again, sometimes I just have to hold my tongue and not say right to them, you know, if you decided to bring this up once in a while, I wouldn't have to.
Absolutely.
Here's a thought. You don't want me to talk about it anymore? You guys bring it up because this should not be something that gets glossed over and requires such constant reminding. So that's my little Jersey girl snark coming out every now and then. So we try to keep her in the back of my head, but and then to have something slightly more diplomatic actually come out and still try to get those results done. So Sarah, finish the sentence for me. I wish I was better at explaining what to whom.
I wish I was better at explaining poverty to persons of privilege.
Yeah, talk more about that.
I think oftentimes if you don't have that lived experience yourself, and we were talking about this with having those difficult conversations, right? Like someone gives you advice, but you don't normally take it unless you have to go through it. And I think that's oftentimes what I see with people who have a lot of opportunity that have been given them that haven't really had the opportunity to see how other people might live. And I think that that is so incredibly important. If you are a person of influence, of power, of privilege, there you're able to expand your horizon and understand, you know, that not everyone lives like that. And I think that especially when it comes to policy is where I often see challenges, because if you haven't walked a mile in someone's shoes, then you don't understand it. And so for me, it's so important to educate ourselves on, you know, how everyone lives and how some of these policies that we create, how it affects the entire population, not just a small amount. And so what I've learned is a lot of people are not doing it with adverse intentions.
Yeah.
It's because they don't know what they don't know.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of opportunities for us to come alongside those individuals and show them in a way that is appropriate, in a way that is meeting them where they are and not making them feel bad, not casting them out or labeling them. But there's a way that we can come alongside them and help them understand through our view, through our experiences. And I think that we can go a long way with that.
Yes, that diplomacy there again becomes so important, because you want to acknowledge their intention, which was most likely good, especially in those contexts. But it doesn't change the fact that there is a benevolent ignorance, a well-meaning but nevertheless missing piece of information. And their ignorance sends them in the wrong direction. And theirs, ours, mine, we have all had those moments not realizing, oh gosh, I had no idea. And there's a book, You Can't Teach Hungry.
Yeah, yeah.
I forget who wrote it, but yeah, it's
a perfect example.
We hear a lot about it. We see it on the news. We watch movies, et cetera. But if you've never worried about where your next meal's coming from, especially for your kids or for others, that's, you can imagine, but you can't imagine.
Right.
And that would be really hard to teach. So I fully give credit for that. Finally, Dr. Sarah, tell me about a time when you had to laugh at yourself.
That's daily, but a more concrete example. Oh, I have a good one. So we've just recently got a dog.
Okay.
And he's a French bulldog. And my, you know, kids have been begging me to get a dog for years. And I finally got them a dog. Well, this dog is a terror, I just have to say.
Oh, no.
And he is more work than my three children.
How old is he?
He's 1 year old.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
And one of the fun things that we did was we decided to let him off the leash. Uh-oh. To see if we could, you know, just try to control him a little bit and to teach him some boundaries. And so he decided to run around the house. We couldn't find him. We found him on the edge of the house and he was rolling around on something. And we were like, what is he doing? Oh, he's itching his back, you know, scratching his back.
Sure.
And so then he jumped and leaped into my arms. Well, little did I know he was covered in feces.
Oh,
and it was all over me. It was all over the dog. The kids were screaming because they had realized what had happened. And so, you know, at some of those times where it's, you just don't know what to do. I mean, we just had to laugh. It was absolutely disgusting, but it was absolutely hilarious. And so there I went in the shower, me and the dog, and I still hold that against him though. I do.
Yes. Well, he held something else against you. So clearly I think that's fair trade. Oh my goodness. Well, thank you for ending on that bizarre note. How can people learn more about you and the University Area CDC?
We would love for you to visit uacdc.org. There you'll find all the information on our social media handles, as well as our neighborhood transformation strategy, all of our events, and the amazing affordable housing developments that we have in the University Area community.
Fantastic. And of course, we'll share the links and all of your social media handles, et cetera, in our show notes as well. Dr. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
It was my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
And to everybody else, thank you for listening and for tuning in. As always, be sure to subscribe so that you never miss an episode. If you love this show, once again, please don't forget to give us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or your platform of choice so that we can help even more people to increase their confidence, presence, and influence. And finally, if you want to download my free guide to equipment recommendations for virtual influence, including my picks for microphones, lights, and more, go to speakingtoinfluence.com. I'm Dr. Laura Sokola, and you're listening to Speaking to Influence, Communication Secrets of the C-Suite.
Thanks for listening to Speaking to Influence, Communication Secrets of the C-Suite, the show for leaders who want to speak with impact. The hosts, producers, owners, and media distributors of the show make no guarantees that the strategies and information discussed will result in profit or other success and may result in losses. The opinions and statements of the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the owners, staff, managers, broadcasters, or sponsors of the show. No medical or psychological therapy or personal or professional wellness or relationship advice is offered in the show. You are advised to seek counsel on matters related to your health, family, relationships, job, or other business and legal matters from licensed advisors in those areas prior to making any changes in business or lifestyle. No information provided may be suitable in your situation. As always, take responsibility for the decisions and actions you take, including the reactions they may make in your work, family, health, and life.